Leadership isn't something that happens in boardrooms or corner offices. It emerges in moments of crisis when everything hangs in the balance. Michael Youssef's masterful exploration of 9 extraordinary leadership challenges reveals that true leadership isn't about position or authority, but about how we respond when faced with our most critical tests. These stories, ranging from battlefield decisions to corporate crises, show us that leadership is forged in fire when lives, organizations, and missions depend on one person's judgment and courage. At Gettysburg's Little Round Top in 1863, Colonel Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain faced a desperate situation. Outnumbered, nearly out of ammunition, and ordered to hold position at all costs, the former rhetoric professor made a pivotal decision, ordering a bayonet charge with his right flank fixed and left swinging forward like a door hinge. This unexpected maneuver routed the Confederate forces' 5th assault. Earlier, Chamberlain had won over mutinous soldiers by appealing to their shared heritage rather than threatening punishment. These same men proved vital in the defense. Chamberlain's leadership transcended the moment. Despite lacking formal military training, his self-education and moral clarity guided his decisions in crisis. His respectful handling of the Confederate surrender at Appomattox later earned widespread respect, demonstrating how leadership shapes long-term reconciliation. This pattern of decisive crisis leadership echoed in Eugene Kranz's handling of the Apollo 13 disaster. His command, "Let's everybody keep cool, let's solve the problem, let's not make it any worse by guessing," exemplified his approach. Kranz had prepared for such moments by building strong teams through crisis simulations and fostering cross-organizational communication channels before they became critical. When Clifton Wharton took over TIA CREF in 1986, he found a $52 billion pension giant operating inflexibly and losing market share to competitors like Fidelity and Vanguard. Instead of immediate changes, Wharton spent 3 months listening before frankly describing the organization as arrogant, paternalistic, defensive, while acknowledging its strengths. He built momentum through a structured approach, creating a trustee joint committee, gathering 800-plus recommendations from campus visits, and engaging directly with college presidents. Wharton's transformation was comprehensive. He introduced rotating positions for high-potential staff, established new management groups, and created accountability centers with greater autonomy. He implemented customer-focused compensation, systematic evaluations, and unbundled TIA CREF's investment options to offer diverse fund choices. By 1993, his leadership had modernized the fund, growing participating institutions from 3,950 to 5,000, policyholders from 890,000 to 1.5 million, and assets from $55 billion to $114 billion. His approach proved how vision paired with inclusive implementation could transform even the most entrenched organizations. In 1991, John Gutfreund, King of Wall Street and chairman of Salomon Inc., faced a crisis when bond trader Paul Moser submitted unauthorized bids in treasury auctions. Despite agreeing to report it, Gutfreund delayed action. Moser continued his misconduct, eventually controlling 86% of a $12 billion treasury offering. Gutfreund waited 3 months before informing authorities, creating the appearance of a cover-up. The fallout was severe. Salomon paid $290 million in settlements, lost $1.65 billion in market value as stock fell from 36 to below 21, and major clients suspended relations. Gutfreund's downfall came not from complicity, but from inaction. Swift discipline of Moser or prompt regulatory disclosure could have contained the crisis. Warren Buffett, appointed interim CEO, demonstrated contrasting leadership through decisive action. He waived attorney-client privilege, severed ties with implicated parties, and demanded full cooperation, promising to replace anyone who didn't comply in 20 minutes. The lesson is clear. During crises, inaction can prove more damaging than the original problem. As one executive observed, comparing Gutfron to Nixon during Watergate, "I think John went to sleep hoping it would just go away." Ethical challenges demand immediate action and transparency for organizational survival. In 1990, Nancy Barry faced a pivotal choice: remain at the World Bank with its prestige and perks, or lead Women's World Banking, WWB, a small microfinance organization with uncertain funding but meaningful purpose. Barry's path was shaped by early experiences exploring slums and working in Peru, where she discovered that while slum dwellers showed remarkable entrepreneurial spirit, they lacked access to credit. This insight led her to champion microfinance, which reduced lending risks by organizing entrepreneurs into borrowing groups. Her leadership excelled through bridging disparate worlds, showing commercial banks the profit potential in low-income borrowers while pushing social advocates towards sustainable models. She maintained rigorous standards, readily withdrawing support from underperforming franchises. At Merck, CEO Roy Vagelos encountered a similar values test with ivermectin, Mectizan, a drug preventing river blindness affecting 20 million people. When funding proved impossible to secure, Vagelos committed to donating the drug indefinitely, seemingly challenging shareholder interests but honoring founder George W. Merck's principle that medicine serves people before profits. By 1995, Merck's $45 million Mectizan contribution had revitalized abandoned villages and given countless children hope for a future free from blindness. When businessman Alfredo Cristiani became El Salvador's president in 1989, the civil war had claimed 70,000 lives. After rebels launched a major offensive and military death squads murdered six Jesuit priests, the country faced potential collapse amid international condemnation. Despite only 0.2% supporting settlement, Cristiani relentlessly pursued dialogue. He integrated military concerns by meeting monthly with commanders and creating advisory groups across ranks. Unlike his predecessor's self-centered yoismo, from yo meaning I, Cristiani spoke inclusively, fostering collective responsibility. A breakthrough emerged in September 1991 with agreements to remove human rights abusers from the military, create a mixed police force, and legitimize the FMLN. At the 1992 peace accord signing, Cristiani's spontaneous handshake with guerrilla commanders became a powerful symbol of reconciliation. By 1997, the FMLN had evolved into the main opposition party with significant legislative presence, while economic growth reached 5% by 1995. Cristiani's leadership, built on conviction, delegation, and persistent negotiation, transformed a seemingly hopeless conflict into peace, ultimately allowing him to drive freely anywhere in the country. The Mann Gulch tragedy illustrates how R. Wagner Dodge's poor communication proved fatal. When he created an escape fire as flames approached, his crew distrusted this innovative solution because he hadn't built credibility. One survivor recalled, "I thought, with the fire almost on our back, what the hell is the boss doing lighting another fire in front of us? We thought he must have gone nuts." The lesson is clear. Build a culture of communication, understanding, and shared responsibility before crises strike. Today's actions determine tomorrow's outcomes when leadership moments arrive, as they will. Leaders who succeed in defining moments, whether military conflicts, organizational changes, or ethical challenges, share key traits: thorough preparation, clear communication, value-aligned decisions, and moral courage when stakes are highest. True leadership isn't about authority, it's about responding effectively to critical tests.